Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno was a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno was elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised Racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Experian. Are you paying for subscriptions you don't use, but can't find the time or energy to cancel them? Experian could cancel unwanted subscriptions for you, saving you an average of $270 per year and plenty of time. Download the Experian app. Results will vary. Not all subscriptions are eligible. Savings are not guaranteed. Paid membership with connected payment account required.
Good morning and welcome to episode 101 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name is Gus Logue, joined by my co-host John Shipley. Today we're going to go over our observations from the first day of phase three for the Jaguars this summer, which was the first day of OTAs. But before we get to that, it's time for our every time vibe check from John. What's up, John?
Hey, man. How you doing?
Pretty good.
I'm doing pretty often. Yeah, often enough.
I mean, it's two Wednesdays in a row now. We were going to try to shoot for Wednesdays going forward.
Yeah,
so good.
It's a thing. It unfortunately, we will bow at bend of the knee to big expectations. And
the vibe check is always just like me starting out with saying good morning, and then we immediately just like vent about work for the most part.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right back down.
We're going to shoot for Wednesdays, moving forward. And obviously, when the season starts, we'll be back with our previews, reviews, etc. We'll see where things take us from there. We have a lot to talk about after the first OTA practice. Yeah, not even in the slightest. It's dead season, dude. Like, yeah, it's not dead season yet, because even a fairly light OTA practice is more than – and some like quotes from Ryan Nielsen and Doug Peterson is more than what we'll get in like late June, early July.
Yeah, like around July 4th, there's literally nothing happening, which is great. But
we fight for our lives. That's when we're going to be doing our absolutely desperate ranking episode again. Where
oh yeah, I'm looking forward to those. I was thinking about that a couple of weeks actually. Is it time to bring those back yet?
I'm not. We just got canceled last year for it. I'm not.
That's true. That is true. It was mostly me, but that's true.
That's fair. All right. OTA is number one. Doug and Peterson, Ryan Nielsen, both talked beforehand. My biggest thing, you know, before we get to the practices, obviously, was, you know, just listening to Doug Peterson. There wasn't, I thought, a ton there, but two things probably I think stood out to me. One of them was obviously him saying he feels like Devon Hamilton is kind of back to himself. Obviously, pads aren't on yet, so I'm assuming he meant more so in terms of, like, energy, and I think Devon Hamilton said he lost 20 pounds after his surgery, so energy, just the way he looks, the way he's acting, he's back to acting like he was before a terrible injury that could have derailed his entire career, which, you know, fair play. Makes sense, though. Good point. So, but just the idea of if Devon Hamilton, you know, he said to Mia with O'Brien with 1010 that he's back to weighing 320 now, which he was before the injury. Just that sizable difference, the fact that he was when he was playing last year. He was nowhere near himself. If they can get like 85% of that guy back, that's a pretty good interior defensive line / starting defensive line.
Absolutely. Right? I mean, we both were kind of applauding the contract extension when it happened because we thought, here's a guy that's a very good two-down player, but he's actually shown a little bit of flashes that he's like certainly not going to turn into a Dexter Lawrence because nobody besides him is that good at pass rushing from a nose technique position. But he showed enough flashes that he could maybe like at least get some more reps on third downs and kind of be a part of that rotation too. And so he was definitely trending upward. And so it's kind of unfortunate that he had that bump in the road, but obviously it was good to hear good things about his health.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're absolutely right about his trajectory. He had a career year in 2022, you know, his first year under Peterson in the Caldwell system. I believe like 2.5 of his 4.5 career sacks came that year. His pressure numbers were good. It was the best, you know, he's played in. It was his third year, you know. He was a young player who's hitting his stride. I remember in training camp last year, he was probably after Josh Allen, their best like defensive lineman in training camp. He was nuts in training camp last year.
Yeah.
Their offensive line obviously ended up not.
I was going to say, like, yeah. Center one kind of influences.
Yeah.
That. It's still true, though. He did look incredible.
There was no other interior guy playing like him in training camp, was there?
That's true.
But
yeah, I thought, comparing it to the rest of the defensive line, that's definitely true.
I thought he was prime for like a legit breakout season. So when that injury happened, I think people knew it was a big deal, but maybe it was a bigger deal than people think. And now I'm thinking like if you can get like 85-90% of 2022 Devon Hamilton back this season with maybe the potential for more, you know, next to Eric Armstead, you know, in between Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker, that's a much improved defensive line from what they were trotting out a year ago. Week 1.
Absolutely. I mean, they do have insurance now in the Jordan Jefferson pick that they got in the 4th round. And so now they're not quite banking on Ham as much as they were last season. It probably would have been wise to find, like we talked about how they probably should have gotten a veteran edge before the season. But I mean, Ham's injury thing happened like well before the season opener. So they could have found maybe a little bit more depth at interior defensive tackle too. But now they do have a little bit more depth, so they're not as liable there pretty much. But
yeah.
If they can get 85-90%, even 70% will be a much higher percentage than last year. So I would take that even.
It's one of the biggest / most important stories they have of the season, I'd say, right?
Yeah.
Like that obviously Trevor Lawrence, year 4 is number 1.
Right.
I'd say Ryan Nielsen, his first year of the defense, is number 2. I did not say Hamilton is up there with anything else.
Because I can't think of anyone else that's coming back from a significant injury. There was
like Tyson Campbell's coming back from a hamstring. Yeah.
I get like Cooper Hodges, but he was an undrafted rookie.
It feels weird to compare hamstrings to back infections that could have ended a career. So he I think is a like really cool story. I'm honestly a little surprised that it hasn't kind of been out there a little bit more. And then I guess the other big thing to take away from, you know, what Doug said was, at least in my opinion, you know, he was kind of putting it on a 2023 class that, okay, now it's kind of, how do I phrase it? Bleep or get off the pot. I don't know any other way to say it. That it's just basically like starting like today, like that practice, it's time for the 2023 class to, you know, okay, well, the reps will be increased. You'll be given the opportunities, but it's time to perform. And to their credit, I think they honestly have a chance to. The biggest thing that he said in terms of like players being used was obviously him saying they wanted ETN to get less touches. To me, it sounded like, and it definitely at least feels like they want Tank Bigsby so badly to take like some kind of role to give ETN a break. Like they're practically begging him to do it. And now it's obviously like, am I wrong? Like it's wait and see, right? If he does, but it definitely seems like they're like, dude, please like be this, right?
Yeah, no, they're on their hands and knees. Peterson said that like without prompt just was asked about ETN and said, oh, yeah, we're going to need to get Tank going, because that's really the way they see it, is that they kind of are going to be able to help each other out and kind of almost create space for each other. But, yeah, I mean, we were talking about it at the practice field. Like, Tank did look really good last year in OTAs and in summer practices, but obviously that didn't necessarily equate to on-field production. So it'll be interesting to see, like, what he looks like throughout this summer.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. All right. Okay. What did he struggle last year, or was he the unluckiest player in the NFL, or was it both?
It was a little bit of both. Probably more so the unluckiest player. Like we were saying, even the one fumble that was definitely his fault, which came against Pittsburgh, was like pretty much a coin flip decision. And I think it was like one of those things that it was a call that withstood because there wasn't enough evidence to overturn it. So if the refs happened to call the fumble the other way and say that his knee was down, then it would have been the Jags' ball. And so all the other ones feel like it would be one in a million. And if you're playing the odds, is this a pro analytics podcast?
It's always pro analytics. There's no problem with analytics. There's a problem with the narratives behind pushing.
Yeah. Well, so not even the analytics, but just probabilities would tell you that that's not going to happen again. And so, there's definitely an argument to be made that like he should have been put out into the field a little bit more, because even though all the turnovers were absurdly ugly, they weren't like 100% his fault.
No, they weren't. It definitely feels like he got kind of a bad, you know, rep. And I mean, even ETN, for as much production as he had, you know, I believe his yards per carry was under 4. You know, was it under 4?
I was going to guess 3.7 or 3.8.
Yeah, that's... We're going to see it. I'm just pulling that out of nowhere. But even he struggled. So, like, is it not fair to say a rookie would struggle behind that line?
Yeah. Kazintite.
I still have allergies. So, that was my other biggest thing. Like, there, it extends, I think. Yeah, 3.8 last year. Woo! There we go.
Bang. Nice. Right, bang.
So, but it looks stupid. Yep. Bang, bang. That was my other big thing. Like, it extends to the rest of the rookie class. I think primarily at Tank, but the rest of the rookie class, they're like, all right, guys, please do something. You know, like, that's the time to start doing something. And again, to their credit, you know, one of my main takeaways from the first practice was Parker Washington had a pretty good day, I thought. I thought Parker Washington. So the receiver room is a little, you know, odd right now because Gabe Davis missed the practice, you know, had the birth of his child.
Right. That was going to be my one thing that I contributed. I was going to say the only other thing I'd have.
Yeah.
Congrats to Gabe Davis.
Hey, you know what? That's a good thing.
I was going to twist it into a take, though, but it's okay.
The hell take were you going to twist that into?
Well, he's also been missing time because of a PCL injury that he suffered last year. And so I thought that was also just like worth mentioning along with the injuries. And also just to point out that he was crazy inconsistent last season, and that's mostly because he has such a high average depth of target that his targets are all pretty volatile, and he's just kind of been inconsistent in general. But I think the injury had a part to play in that, so that was going to be my spiel.
You went from congratulating him on having a baby to calling him inconsistent. Like a 20-second span.
You know what's happening is I think I'm just like trying to mentally prepare for Trevor Lawrence contract extension day online. Yeah. And I'm trying to like convince myself that Gabe Davis and the current cast is actually better than they are.
That's another thing that we can get to. And I guess while we're on the topic, PFF released an article last 2 years, Pro Football Focus, says that Trevor Lawrence had like the lowest rate of checkdown passes of any quarterback in the NFL. I think it was like 3.4% or something like that. They didn't actually quantify how they like define checkdown pass, but it made sense to me to a degree. Like, Trevor's had one of the quickest like time to throws in NFL since Doug got there. Like, he's mostly like, yeah, that stuff Arden Key and whoever else said it, yeah, it like is definitely misconstrued, but in a way they are right that he's throwing to the first read more often than not. But that's because like it's the offense, you know. Patrick Mahomes plays in the same offense, he still pushes the ball downfield. I think even PFF noted he had the most big time throws downfield in the NFL mm-hmm. last year. So he still pushes the ball downfield, but more often than not, he's going to his first read, which that's usually not a check down. You know, I mean, right. Andy Reid running backs aren't normally used a lot in the passing game, and Jaguars running backs just really haven't been either. Now that they have Brian Thomas and Gabe Davis, two more vertically based guys, what does the passing game look like this year? Do you think they do push the ball more downfield this year? Or do you think they try to fit them into their kind of horizontal quick game?
I think they're going to try to go more vertical, and they're going to do it with more play action. I think like a lot of times that Doug has been asked throughout this offseason about, and even going back to late last year, about like ways to improve the passing game, he'll mention the running game and vice versa. And so like they clearly believe as a coaching staff that the like running game and the passing game kind of work as one, or you need to balance it pretty well. And so I think based on like the moves that we've seen in the past 1 to 2 off seasons too, in terms of trying to beef up the interior offensive line with various moves and then adding like a blocking tight end and a power running back, they really want to go under center more. And they were just, yeah, they kind of had to shy away from that late last year with all the injuries to Lawrence. It was easier for him to operate out of shotgun and just grab the ball and get it out quick to the first read, like you were saying. And so now I think there's going to be a lot more under center, which will help kind of diversify the run game, because there's just a lot more kind of buttons that you can press and plays that you can get to from under center running rather than from shotgun. And then off of that, assuming that that's going to be successful, or at least successful enough, then they'll be able to take a lot of shots off of play action. And I think they've had some like pretty solid play action designs, but they just haven't really quite had the speed. Like Calvin Ridley has plenty of speed, but he's definitely more like a mid-range Mamba, like we've said, than like a deep sniper who's going to just catch 40-yard bombs. And then before him, like it was just Marvin Jones, who was at the back end of his career, never really fast to begin with. And so
you're missing two games.
That's part of the reason I'm kind of talking myself into this year's receiving core, is that like I don't think it's necessarily like a top 10 like wide receiver room or pass catching unit or anything like that, but I just think it's really well equipped to take advantage of Lawrence's strengths for the first time, because they actually have speed on the perimeter, and that's gonna really make a big difference.
I agree. I do think that in a way the Ridley, Zay Jones, Kirk, and even the Marvin Jones, Zay Jones, Kirk receiver rooms didn't really make sense for Trevor's skill set, right? Mm-hmm. Like Trevor's skill set, we've talked about, like can be like any kind of quarterback, but when you're thinking of the type of receivers to put around him, I'm not thinking of like those type of guys naturally, you know?
Yeah. It's like they did a 2K draft and they just drafted a bunch of like the computer generated players instead of like real players.
I mean, they were all like more or less the same, like,
almost. In terms of like how they fit all together, I mean, not that they were like all in, the players themselves are NPCs, but in terms of, yeah, like the way they fit in a room.
No, 100%. I definitely do think that they have more vertical value this year than the guys they have. I guess, why do you think his checkdown percentage was so high in his rookie year also? He led the NFL that year.
It's like the inverse of the argument you made where like, the past 2 years, they're trying to get the ball out so quickly. It's usually to the first or second read. And so that then there's not a lot of checkdowns. But in his first year, there was like, it wasn't a horrific offense, but it wasn't greatly schemed up either. And then in terms of like X's and O's, it wasn't horrific. I've seen worse in terms of X's and O's.
I was ready to pounce.
It certainly wasn't great either. And then like the offensive line and receivers weren't great. And so the difference is that Lawrence was dropping back and holding on to the ball longer in 2021, his rookie year. And so since he was holding onto the ball longer, he had more time to actually get through all of his progressions and then finally get to his like third or fourth guy, which would be the check down. Because I think the way PFF quantifies it is that the check down is basically like the last guy in the progression, where like if there's like a tight end in the flat and he's the fourth read, like that's kind of sort of not a check down, but since it's like he's the very last guy that you're looking at, it kind of qualifies as a check down. And so, yeah, just because it's all about like time to throw, I think.
Is it better to have just a balance?
I think.
I mean, there were good quarterbacks on both sides.
There's like probably like the best running scheme is to have like a diverse running scheme, so you can kind of take that with the same grain of salt. Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, we got on the receiver tangent and then the check down tangent.
Yeah.
Parker Washington, I thought looked good. My overall take is, I think Parker Washington could be in the driver's seat for the number five receiver role. I mean, obviously, it was a little bit of a different day in terms of receiver hierarchy with Gabe Davis out, with Brian Thomas Jr. still, you know, learning how to swim, you know, as a rookie. So Parker Washington, I thought, had the second best day of any receiver after Christian Kirk, who, I mean, Kirk's another takeaway. Kirk looked 110% healthy. I mean, Kirk looks ready to go as he looked in his first practice with the Jaguars, at least I thought.
That's what I was going to say. I feel like it was a big injury takeaways day, which really, like, that's a pretty big chunk of being in sports media is just getting a lot of information about injuries. But, like, I thought Trevor Lawrence and Christian Kirk both looked just very smooth and like they had never been injured at all last year out of practice. And then I agree with you where I think Parker Washington was easily the second most impressive, not just receiver, but I would say offense player that I watched. And granted, I was mostly watching quarterbacks and receivers, but yeah, he had a nice day.
And like, to some extent, he is the kind of receiver who would have a good day on a day like OTAs, right? When everything's on air, like he's like that kind of athlete. Maybe there's some guys who their skill sets are better in games and practices, but I don't know. I think the fact that he produced some last year and he was a draft pick probably gives him a leg up over the Elijah Cookses and Tim Jones and Josh Cephises of the world.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, like, what do you mean by a good day at practice? Because to me, it's not like, oh, he had like the most yards in 7-on-7s. It's like,
guys didn't have a good day. You know, yeah, you know what a bad day looks like.
I know what a bad day looks like. But to me, when I say Parker Washington had a good day, it's like more so he looks like really crisp running his routes, didn't have any mistakes. Yeah. Also might have had a productive 7-on-7 session, but I just want to clarify with you because we're both like, yeah, Parker Washington, good day.
Fair enough. No, fair enough. Yeah. I mean, like you said, he I thought looked incredibly explosive throughout the day. I thought that he was running good routes. I don't think you can take a lot away from like the individual sessions when they're throwing on air other than, ooh, cool, like catch and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's literally like, it. Ooh,
yeah, cool. But in terms of like team drills, I thought Parker Washington made several, you know, nice grabs. He definitely seems like a guy who I didn't see this type of confidence from him in almost any practice last year. I thought so. I don't know. I honestly just thought he was the aggressor, you know, when it was offense against defense, like he was taking it to the defense. I thought that he had, again, a good day in the OTA context. You know, we're not putting him in. You know, not putting his name on a stadium yet, you know, as far as I know.
Yeah. No, I think that was a good point. I definitely agree where I think it was a very stark change in confidence from last year to this year. And so that probably made a big difference on Monday.
Were there any rookies that stood out to you? For me, it was Jaren Jones. He made two plays in team drills where, like, they're not in pads, but he was fairly physical and, like, kind of bullied the opposing receivers, and this is his first, you know, real NFL practice against veterans. So he, to me, is like the rookie who at least raised my eyebrows. I mean, again, it's OTAs, doesn't really mean much it in comparison to like the practices with pads. Alliteration there. Yeah, it pales in comparison. So with that said, I still came away incredibly impressed with Jones. Are there any rookies that kind of caught your eye?
No, not that I can really think of, but I will say there's a second year player that I was pretty impressed with, which is Tyler Lacy. I had to like look down at the sheet to make sure like it was him, because like he really grew into that Calais Campbell number of 93. When he was standing next to Mason Smith, I was like, wow, I kind of see what everyone's talking about inside the Jaguars is building in terms of like getting off the bus and just having like a super imposing defensive line, because they've got some big dudes. And so he just like looked impressive in between snaps, but then he was also playing well during snaps too. And so I thought Tyler Lacy had a nice performance.
I guess Mason Smith's still looking like an alien next to dudes like 8 or 9 years older than him was a another takeaway. There's not many more you can, I think, honestly, get away from it. I mean, obviously, it was not the first day of Ryan Nielsen implementing a scheme, but it was one of the more significant days, like their first time really competing against the offense. Hearing the communication, I thought, was awesome. Like, it was literally, like, chatter from, like, the second they broke the huddle to the second the ball was snapped. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. In terms of Ryan Nielsen's presser, it's obvious he was playing the, you know, it's OTAs. I haven't seen these guys actually practice yet.
Yeah.
It's fair enough, you know, very, very fair point to make. But I mean, he said some interesting things. Miles Cole is the only defensive end on the roster. One of the quietest best bits on the team right now. They have a bunch of outside linebackers and a bunch of defensive linemen, defensive tackles, one defensive end, and he even mentioned, what was it, playing with three defensive ends. He's a unicorn that's going to change the complexion of it. But
I'm pretty sure the Jags have been doing the same thing with Smoot for a while now.
Yeah, they have. Listening to him talk about Cole to me was, I don't know, refreshing. I feel like you got more out of it in terms of getting an actual coach's kind of, you know, quasi-scouting report than we've maybe have gotten, you know, in the last, you know, couple years or so.
Yeah, it was especially nice after his answer to Tyson Campbell, because I was like, oh, man, this is gonna be a nice juicy quote to post. But no, instead he was like, good, he's a good player. And then he went on a little bit after that, but it wasn't quite as juicy as I was looking for. Yeah. But you're right, yeah. The in-depth on Miles Cole was nice.
Yeah, it was not. First impressions of Mac Jones? I thought he had a nice day. Like, again,
yeah, what is honestly, he did.
What is a good day in OTAs is a fair question, but like, you agree with me. I thought he had like a nice day.
He actually looked pretty smooth, comfortable, confident. He took Jarvis Landry's bit of like celebrating touchdowns afterwards, and there was also just like multiple times where he would just like just hold on to the ball during a rep, whether it was on a during 7-on-7s or just like at the very beginning during indie drills, he would hold on to the ball and then just tuck it and run. So I don't know. He's already been pretty entertaining. And yeah, again, he looked smooth out there and kind of smoother than I would have expected. And so I think he had a nice day.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Trevor, like, I don't know, at this point, like these kind of practices for Trevor, like I know he's still a young quarterback growing, et cetera, going into his fourth year, but I don't know, his practices just feel so ho-hum for him at this point, you know, now, you know, like, I feel like he made some nice throws, especially in the red zone. Him and Evan Engram didn't connect on one play that if they did, it would have been, you know, a beautiful play, but mm-hmm. It would just, like, seem like a tick off, but otherwise, I thought he looked, you know, like Trevor.
Yeah, he had a really nice throw to Christian Kirk in the back of the end zone, and then I thought, like, the most notable thing I saw from Trevor, other than like you were saying, like he just looks like a total pro, like he's been doing this for 10 years instead of three, is that he did a really good job of helping out the young guys. I feel like where like with Brian Thomas, he kind of like, I don't want to say floated, but he kind of floated a few passes his way and like was just like making sure Thomas was like getting catches and getting into a groove. And it wasn't just Thomas, it was like Cephas and all the other young receivers too. And so Lawrence is really acting like a pro in that regard as well.
That's probably going to be the single most important thing outside of anything regarding Nielsen, the defense, that happens over the offseason practices and early training camp, is him and Thomas getting, you know, on the same page. It's obviously still a work in progress. But, Gus, anything else from the first OTAs practice? Like we said, it's a relatively light practice. But, some things, you know, definitely I thought, you know, stood out more so than others.
I think the only other big thing that we didn't mention is just the fact that Peterson, they're going to have joint practices in the preseason with the Bucks. I was just going to ask, do you know if it's home or away, or if it's in Tampa Bay or in Jacksonville?
Yeah, he said it'll be in Jacksonville.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't think I've covered a joint practice before. I'm trying to remember. And
last year it was in Detroit, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it was in Detroit and Atlanta the last 2 years. And then obviously COVID and 2021, 2020, etc. I don't think one happened in 2019, but I don't know. I feel like I wake up with less memories every single day. Like I'm I'm losing my memory by like one percentage point each day. So that's
I don't get what you mean, honestly.
That's the point of the offseason that we're at. Yeah. I'm straddling the line on that one.
It'll be fun though to cover a joint practice. Do you know anyone on the Bucks beat?
Yeah, I know a couple. Yeah, they're all the merry gang. It to me, I'm just excited about the idea of like competition type stuff, like comparing these guys like in a practice setting, and it'll just give you a chance to you will watch the Jaguars practice against each other for a dozen plus times. Our natural bias, like we're going to lose a little bit of context of what a non-Jaguars team looks like. So it'll just be a nice little, you know, scale. Mm.
Headline number two is going to be Mike Evans versus Tyson Campbell. So that's going to be the matchup to watch.
Yeah. I think it's going to be Baker Mayfield just exited locker from Ryan Nielsen's stuffing. Best load.
Wow, yours is a lot better than mine. We got to switch those headlines.
Yeah. I don't know. It's small print. It's small print. It's all right. With that said, we'll be right back to discuss a few more things in episode 101. Is it weird that I think 101 is more commemorative than 100? I don't know. I just like 101.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll let you think about that while we're on break.
Okay.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to episode 101, woo, of the Jaguar Report podcast, John's favorite episode so far. We're going to talk about the Jaguars' season 5 premiere of The Hunt. Sorry, I had to pick up my fidget toy. It's a koozie, or no, whatever this is called.
A fidget, yeah.
Anyway, we're going to talk about the team's season 5 premiere of The Hunt, which is basically their off-season YouTube series, providing kind of a inside glimpse of what goes on behind the scenes throughout the whole off-season of like free agency and the draft and the whole shebang. So that's always a good watch, and the production team does a great job. And we're also going to talk about Trevor Lawrence, just because it feels like his contract extension is going to be broken news at any point now, any day now. And so let's procrastinate the Trevor talk though, since it'll be a little bit of a headache. What was your biggest takeaway or three from The Hunt?
I don't know. Like, I want to say the collaborative process and stuff like that, just seeing how many different people have a voice in it. But then again, like, I'm not digesting it as a fan. I'm digesting it just as like impartial party. And in my head, I'm like, they can obviously edit this. Like, you can pick me in the first round and probably edit a video to make it look, you know, pretty sweet, right? Am I wrong?
Absolutely.
But I don't know. I thought some of the other cool things. I was happy they showed the Bryant's parts of the Brian Thomas combine interview. Combine interviews are still the one thing where I'm still like, okay, what do you actually accomplish here? And it seemed like, you know, they were talking to a bunch of different guys. Press Taylor was really, you know, putting them.
I noticed that too.
Yeah, he was making a face to music, man. I was impressed, you know, by that. I thought the stuff surrounding the Mason Smith pick was interesting. The fact that Trent kind of leaned into the bit. He was like, you know, we'll either pick a small guy or a big guy. I prefer a big guy or whatever. So it wasn't that.
Balls on the table, man.
Yeah. Who do you think was a small guy?
That was like one of my big takeaways, is that it seemed like at both pick 23 and at 48, they had narrowed down their selection pretty clearly to two different guys. So obviously that turned into Brian Thomas and Mason Smith. I also thought it was funny how Balky just completely botched Mason Smith's name pronunciation. It was like Meason. It wasn't even – it was not close.
No. He was what Balky said. before the pick. He said, we'll let this baby fall to us. We're not going to chase anybody. We just have to decide, go big or go small at 48. Mason Smith or, and then like they blanked out the other name. He says, you know what my vote would be, go big or go home. And then he proceeds to say, size matters. If it didn't matter, there wouldn't be weight classes in wrestling. There wouldn't be weight classes in UFC. Let me finish reading it.
There wouldn't be weight classes in wrestling. What are we talking about?
What is that? Weight matters, size matters, length matters, and it does show up on Sundays. I don't even necessarily disagree. I wouldn't have phrased it as such, but
I don't necessarily disagree either. I just think it's funny.
Yeah, no. No, it probably, I'm not even going to say it probably is. It is, but I'm not going to be sophomore. You know? You can learn a thing of five.
Football philosophy is hilarious.
No, it is.
It's just so far away from actual philosophy.
Who do you think were the two names that we didn't hear about? I think Terrion Arnold, the first one, which...
That was going to be my guess, too.
I mean, dude, they said on Facebook that they picked him. you saw that, right? The Facebook post? Yeah. Yeah, so it clearly had to be Terrion Arnold, right?
Yeah, I forgot about that, actually.
not to be the guy who reads too much in the social media, but that's a little too on the nose.
Yeah.
For my liking. I don't know. 48, it had to be one of two guys, I think. Either Rakestraw or Renardo Green.
Hmm. So you think definitely corner?
I think so. Who else would he mean by go small? He's not taking a skill player.
Well, I was thinking, what if he takes a different defensive tackle? What if they're thinking between Mason Smith and Michael Hall Jr.? Just now. That makes sense.
Maybe. Yeah, a possibility. I hate it, but yeah.
No, I think you're right on this one. I think that was just one scenario I thought of, but yeah, I don't even think the smaller guy would be
better. I think he meant go the bigger defensive tackle or go to smaller defensive tackle. I'll be honest with you. That wasn't a blimp on my radar.
I think Rakestraw is a good guess. It's probably be who I would say.
I think so too. So. I don't know. We look like idiots. We look like dumbasses for saying they'd pick a corner in the first round. I'm pretty positive I said something along the lines of I would eat paper if they didn't pick a cornerback in the first round. So but they were considering it, right? Like, we're not that crazy, right?
It was a matter of how the board breathed, John, obviously. It is interesting, though, how, the Jaguars' draft history keeps getting connected to the Lions, because obviously there was Trayvon Walker and Aiden Hutchinson. But then last year, Brian Branch was a really popular mock pick. And maybe that was just kind of media and fans the whole time, and he wasn't a serious consideration for the Jags. But he ended up going to Detroit. And then this year, the Lions ended up drafting both Terrion Arnold and Enos Rakestraw. So,
ooh.
It'll be in another year or five. It'll be
interesting. I'll
look back at that.
Connecting dots. I like that. All right. I guess my other big takeaway was pro scouts have a insanely probably difficult job. I don't know why I wasn't thinking this, but I'm an idiot. I know that's why. But I wasn't considering the fact that they have to watch the other professional leagues and not just the NFL. Having to have a scouting report on every single football player seems terrible.
I was thinking during it, I was like, wow, being a pro football scout would be pretty cool. I feel like, not that just that it would be less work and less traveling more so than being a college scout, even though that would definitely be a big factor. But I'm just personally a bigger fan of the pro game than the college game. So I was like, that'd be a pretty cool job. But then I thought what you just said, I was like, it would be a pretty cool job, scouting Brandon Ayuk and T. Higgins in those what-if scenarios, but then also scouting the rest of the 52 players on each of those teams' rosters. That's doesn't sound as fun.
Yeah. No disrespect, but it sounds like Dante Seven Circle of Hell to me. no disrespect to them. Like scout all of those. Yeah, that sounds like I would absolutely prefer to be like a human pinata and have the children have metal baseball bats than do that. That's at least where I stand. But hey, my hat's off to them for being troopers. What were your biggest, I guess, takeaways? Where were your biggest points of intrigue from? I will say I thought it was one of the best ones they've done. I absolutely think.
I thought from objective standpoint, like as a from a media perspective, I thought it was awesome because it gave like one or two interesting scoops. But like I mostly just enjoyed watching it, I guess, as a just was as someone like with nothing, no feelings or work attached to it. I just thought it was like a great production and a great video. But then if I put my fan cap on, I was a little bit disappointed, honestly, because I feel like there was a lot more kind of scoops last year. And then obviously, like you said, kind of at the top, sorry, there's something in my eye. Just fight through. Like you said at the top.
It's the twinkle in your eye talking about Pro Scouts.
What do you say?
It's the twinkle in your eye talking about Pro Scouts.
Probably. Right, they obviously cut a lot of stuff out, and they're going to make the team like look as good as possible. And so obviously there's going to be a lot of stuff that was said within the walls that isn't included. But I still thought, I don't know, it could have been a little bit juicier again. But the one piece of juice that I did like was that like Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson were like sharing gossip or sharing texts from their own like BFFs after the Mason Smith pick and saying like how good of a pick Joe Douglas and Andy Reid thought it was.
It definitely seemed like the most like Andy Reid player to love, right?
Yeah, I mean, Chris Jones was a common comp, and for a lot of like off the field reasons, maybe that's not fair because I don't think that's fair actually. Because it was like really talented interior defensive lineman who fell in the second round. That's like the big comparison, and so it is interesting that Andy Reid was a fan.
I did laugh when they showed Trent turning down people trying to trade up to 17, and him. I don't know, just him saying. No, I don't think so. Was defeating for me. I had nothing invested in it. And even I was like, dang. Just imagine being on the other end of that being like,
yeah. Man, I thought that was great. It was cold.
Yeah, no, it was. Hey, the war room looks good too. Remember the war room used to just be two guys at a plastic folding table?
Yeah. No, the war room does look clean. It's funny that it's at a conference table though. I mean, I don't know. I feel like a lot of war rooms are kind of like almost like a indoor movie theater or like an at-home movie theater type of setup where it's just a bunch of chairs pointed at like one big screen, but they're just all seated around one table, like facing one another. Maybe they had cameras like behind or televisions behind the cameras or something like that. But yeah, it was definitely an upgrade.
If I designed one of those, I'd make it a round table like King Arthur. That's my throw in for that take.
I would feel like I would like hold it at a really nice restaurant or something like that. And just like rent out a room. That could be cool.
The only good thing about the COVID draft was them showing every general manager having like a different setup. Like Dave Caldwell, I think, had like hit in like his home movie theater. I'm like, just imagine like controlling a team's destiny from your home theater, dude. That seems awesome. They should go back to that.
That definitely was the best part. And then Goodell just like doing it from that massive chair. The fact that he was sitting down, I feel like he still should have stood up for it. He should have like walked up to a podium for each pick in his basement.
It was his fireside chats to a nation that needed him at the time.
True.
With that said,
good call.
With that said, let's go ahead and get to the topic at hand. I hate it, guys.
All right, well, you start off because I don't even know what exactly are we talking about here. Because we've already kind of whined a little bit about how annoying the day on Twitter is going to be when he signs his contract.
Yeah, I guess it's just that it's gotten to a point where the extension talks are so prevalent that freaking LaShawn McCoy in that terrible TV show is talking about it. You know what I mean? So like the most like casual of casual fans are now having to look at
that. I guess we could talk about what Dan Orlovsky said, because I didn't really quite understand it, because he was saying that like Trevor Lawrence should wait, but like I don't know.
He said the Jaguars shouldn't pay him, and then he said Trevor Lawrence shouldn't want to be paid more.
Yeah, exactly. It was like contradictory. And then also like so many quarterbacks signed in the past two off seasons alone that like nobody else has just like waited around. They'll be like, no, I don't want the money now. I'll wait until next season. Like that's just not really how the quarterback market works. And so like, I feel like off signs both logically, but then also recently the news have been pointing to a contract extension happening soon before the season starts. And then, yeah, I don't know what Orlovsky was talking about.
Yeah, like where there's smoke, there's definitely fire, right? Like I feel like it just wouldn't be this openly talked about and debated if it wasn't going to happen sooner or later. I know people have been doing it for Tua for even longer, and Tua is still not paid. But I don't know. I just feel like it's different because I mean, the Jaguars and Trevor Lawrence just don't really generally get talked about. Like,
right?
If the Jets had the Jaguars collapse last year, or like the Chargers or something, or some other big market team, it'd be going like the Eagles. It'd be all over, you know, like Stephen A. like Smith and stuff. Oh, totally. They don't really talk about the Jags.
I was gonna say, I feel like even Tua, like people haven't been all over it, but people have definitely been talking about it, like pretty much since last season ended. Just like the fact that, like, oh, are the Dolphins gonna pay him? What's gonna happen? And I mean, maybe there's more talk around it because he's not really on the same tier of Lawrence, and like, because Lawrence, like, everyone knows, like, he, I guess, or other than Orlovsky and probably a good chunk of people, but most people would be right if they know that, or if they said that Trevor Lawrence deserves to be paid, like no matter what, top of the market. But like Tua is a little bit riskier because not only is he like not as talented and he's a little bit limited in terms of like throwing over the middle of the field, but like he also has so much injury, like sketchy injury background. Like I know Lawrence had so many injuries last year, but concussions are a whole different thing. And so, yeah.
I think that's the big thing people are missing is his splits pre and post injury. You know, like Daniel Griffiths posted it yesterday. Like, but yeah, before his injury, like he was having a good season. Like, was having a great season. Like breakout one of the faces of the NFL MVP candidate season. No, but he was having a good season. He ended up obviously with a shrug season. Like, it's okay, but I thought he was playing well before he got hurt. Doug Peterson commented on it some. I'll pull up the exact quote, but I don't know. More or less, I asked this to somebody else to get their thoughts on it. I'd like to get yours. I feel like normally when Doug gets asked about contracts, he's very quick to be like, "No, I just coach here." You know, like that go talk to somebody else. That has nothing to do with me. Whereas in this case, I feel like he talked about it a little more than he normally would. But I don't know. Maybe that could be a case of the quarterback is obviously different than anybody else, even like the pass rusher. So here's what he said. He said, "I think it's part of the business, but obviously the sooner you get it done, it's behind everybody. And now we focus on football. So that's not lingering and that's not out there. I know Trent and his agent have continued to talk and will talk. They're working hard and tirelessly. I just got to coach Trevor, coach football, and hopefully it gets done and it will." But he's still mostly saying, "I'm just a coach here." But right. I feel like he's also speaking more on it than he has most other contract issues in the past.
To me, it almost felt like he was like, "It's going to get done. Yeah, just like, here, take this. Just like, shut up about it. Like, stop asking me. It's going to happen."
The fact that the head coach is openly talking about it, the quarterback's openly talking about it, the GM's openly talking about it, the GM said the owner's involved.
Right.
It'd be an upset if this isn't done by training camp or around the start of training camp, right?
I guess the only reason it wouldn't is if, like, Jared Goff's deal kind of, like, made things more difficult. I'm not really sure why. I feel like, if anything, it would help. Like, we saw with Josh Allen, like, Brian Burns' deal kind of helped just, like, the parties reach a deal because they were like, okay, that was the most recent, like, young elite edge player. Like, they were in the same draft class, just, like, 15 picks apart and pretty much the same age. So it was a very comparable situation. And so I don't know, like, maybe – I feel like Lawrence's camp should just ask for like a penny more than what Goff got and just call it a day, because that would still make him like the second or third highest paid quarterback in the league in terms of annual salary at least. But maybe there's going to be some difficulties if Lawrence's camp is like, well, despite like the stats and the team records, Lawrence is like a way better quarterback than Jared Goff is. And so we need way more than the contract that he just signed, which is an average of $53 million.
I mean, none of the reports have made it sound like $60 million, right? Like, it seems like all the reports have been like 50-ish, at least.
Yeah.
So far, Jamie Fowler, I think, had the one where he said he thinks it'll be around $50 million. Nobody's really talking crazy money yet, which I don't know. Maybe he'll be closer to 53 than 60, which I don't think either one of us would have thought, you know, say like a month ago.
Yeah, I honestly, I still kind of think it's going to be closer to 60 than 53, even though, yeah, like, I think a lot of the recent smoke probably does indicate that I'll be closer to 53. I just wouldn't be surprised because, like, I don't know. Josh Allen's deal looked really similar to Brian Burns's, but then when you kind of, like, looked at it in detail, it was Josh Allen is going to get a lot more money by the end of the contract. And so I think it could be kind of similar with Lawrence, where, like, at first it looks like he got a penny more than Goff, but Lawrence's camp was actually able to get a really good just value out of the contract.
Is there any credence to – I mean, I think we both agree Orlovsky is more or less off his rocker. Is there any credence to the point that Trevor maybe should want to wait a year? The way I see it is, I don't know, man, if you're getting offered 50-plus million a year, just the 1% chance that you go out there and have some kind of devastating injury that messes up your future income, I think you take it, right?
Yeah, I feel like the thing is going to be after security. Like, I think it's going to be, like, a really big 7, maybe even 8-year deal. Like, I think if he was, like, trying to chase money, then we would be thinking it would be, like, a 3 to 4 year deal. And even then, like, it makes more sense if he was chasing money, it would make more sense to sign a deal now for, like, 2 years or 3 years and then just, like, reach free agency again sooner than it would be to just, like, sit around for another season without getting the contract done. So yeah, I don't really, I feel like Orlovsky has generally been pretty pro Trevor Lawrence, honestly, at least in terms of national media. So, like, I almost feel like he was just trying to, like, spitball a take to have a
You think he was peer pressured?
Not peer pressure. I just think he was doing what I do on this podcast and think of takes on the fly.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. You do on the fly.
Sometimes it doesn't always work. It's okay, Orlovsky.
I was going to say, I listened to the argument. I was hoping for that's the thing. I want to listen to, like, a convincing argument. You know, I feel like I haven't heard it yet, but maybe that's just because I don't respect many of the presenters of arguments.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's my biggest thing.
If Lawrence ends up signing a deal for, like, $45 million, I'll be $45 million annually. I won't be like, okay, I was wrong about him. I'll be like, why are you guys digging yourselves deeper into this weird hole? Obviously, it would be like that would be a huge discount for the Jaguars, but I'm just saying in terms of, like, where people, like, value him in terms of quarterbacks in the league, and he's most certainly up there.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan Love will probably get paid a semi-similar number soon. I feel like people will probably have a more, like, positive reaction to that. But Jordan Love's sample size is even smaller than, you know, Trevor's.
Yeah, it's all about, like, recency bias and then, like, a little bit the market probably. But Lawrence was – he's 20-30 in his career through 3 seasons as a starter. But he went 15-5 through, like, his best stretch under Peterson. It was from the 2022 bye until Lawrence was injured against the Bengals in Week 13 on Monday Night Football. The Jags were 15-5. But then after that, they were 0-5. And before that, it was Urban Meyer and then Doug Peterson's first, like, 7 games. So – like, depending on what sample you want to look at, because I heard Orlovsky also was saying, like, just kind of, like, cited Lawrence's overall career record. And I'm like, I mean, he was drafted onto a team that went 1-15 the year prior. It's not like he was drafted onto this year's Chiefs or, like, the Ravens when they drafted Lamar or the Chiefs when they drafted Patrick Mahomes. Like, he was on a terrible team. And so the fact that he's even 20-30 is not – it's not great, but it's not, like, as horrific as people think it is.
He also said he was going into his third year. Like openly being, like he was, like, making a mistake. He was openly being, like, Urban year wasn't – didn't occur. So, yeah. I don't know. It's all over the place. Gus, you got anything else? Well, we have another OTA practice next Tuesday. So, we obviously got that. We'll knock it for next Wednesday. But until then, you got anything else for us, my friend? I'm tapped out. Like I said, we're at that point of the year. We're basically waiting on practices and a Trevor Lawrence contract at this point. Until then, we're kind of just playing a rope a dope.
I thought of a take modification the other day, or take addition. Anyway, I said the Packers are going to win the Super Bowl, and Dontavian Wicks is going to be Super Bowl MVP. Just a random, crazy offseason dumb take, but there you go. I'll put money on it. Don't you worry. I'll put some money on Wicks once the Packers do reach the Super Bowl to win the Super Bowl.
And know which team I'm rooting against this year.
I kind of am too, because I have a close friend who is a big Packers fan, and so naturally I root against the Packers whenever I'm like watching football with them. So me and a couple of my friends have a bit where we all pretend like we're the world's biggest Packers fans, and he really hates it. So yeah, I'm also kind of sort of going to be hate watching them at the same time.
So you can't lose.
Exactly, John. Exactly.
I bet your favorite movie is Over the Hedge, right? All right.
Let's get out of here. Let's get out of here.
Thank you for listening to episode 101 of the Jaguar Report podcast. John Shipley, my friend and co-host Gus Lug. We will be back next Wednesday. Same time, same place. Not actually the same time. We're never consistent in that. But we'll be back next Wednesday. Gus, you got anything else?
No, sir. See you Wednesday.
NFL, you got Lug bald.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.